10 agencies will be hiring new chief information officers over the next year. There's not some mass exodus of senior IT executives. These 10 agencies have politically appointed CIOs. And the end of the Obama administration is coming soon. In his weekly feature, The Reporter's Notebook, executive editor Jason Miller asks the question about whether CIOs need to be politically appointed. He joins me now with more. And so that's the question. Do they?
I think it's unclear. I think some agencies, as we'll talk about, Tom, need political appointed CIOs. Some don't. A lot of it is dependent on both the person and the agency, not one or the other. Meaning somebody could be successful as a career CIO. Someone could be just as successful as a politically appointed CIO. And some agencies are better off, according to Congress, that definitely need politically appointed CIOs. And some go back and forth, depending on the administration and the secretary and deputy secretary's whim. So it's unclear from my reporting, but it's definitely a trend that we're seeing maybe a few more being politically appointed.
Now, what about Veterans Affairs?
That's probably the shining example of where a politically appointed CIO does make sense. It's not just politically appointed, it's Senate confirmed, which is another big difference. A lot of CIOs could be politically appointed. Let's say Homeland Security Department, Luke McCormick is one example. He is politically appointed, but he's not Senate confirmed. At VA, which you brought up, they've had a tradition of having someone who is a pass, if you will, politically appointed, Senate-confirmed CIO, and for good reason. It's a huge organization with a $3.6 billion or more IT budget. They need someone that brings to the table maybe a different kind of experience, a different kind of knowledge base and skills and capabilities. That being said, it doesn't mean a career civil service person couldn't do the job. It's just Congress, for whatever reason, has decided that's what they wanted.
Because at VA, you've had particular issues, and some of those issues have been related to, in part, to particular systems operated by VA, their scheduling system and so forth, and they've got really old technology there, and so there is both political and technological push to change those systems. And if that changes with the new administration, that priority, that could really signal kind of a lot of wasted effort on the part of the prior crew.
Well, I think what I've heard from most of the people I've spoken with is IT is such a nonpartisan domain for the federal sector that things aren't going to change that much, right? Tom, we've talked about this. Cybersecurity is still going to be important. Data center consolidation is still going to happen. They may call it something else. So I think a VA, the same thing. Then all of a sudden, they're not going to be like, let's not have a better electronic health records, or let's not deal with the claims backlog through technology. No one's going to say, let's go back to paper. I think that ship obviously has sailed.
So tell us which agencies do have political CIOs, and of those, which ones are Senate confirmed?
So there's 10 total. Tony Scott, obviously, from the Office of Management and Budget, federal CIO. He is Senate confirmed.
The Uber CIO.
Terry Halverson from the Defense Department. He is not Senate confirmed. Luke McCormick from the Homeland Security Department, not Senate confirmed. Michael Johnson from the Energy Department, not Senate confirmed. Ann Duncan, the Environmental Protection Agency. Now, she's interesting because she currently is not Senate confirmed, but her position previously had been additionally as an associate administrator in the Office of, I think it's Environmental Information, and CIO, and that position would have been Senate confirmed, but because the Senate put a hold on it, they split the position into two and gave Ann just the CIO position. Rafael Diaz from the Department of Housing and Urban Development, not Senate confirmed. Steve Cooper, Commerce Department, not Senate confirmed. Laverne Council, Veterans Affairs Department, Senate confirmed. And Rob Klopp from the Social Security Administration, not Senate confirmed.
And of course, he said that he was there temporarily. That's been his mantra the whole time. He's out of the valley and just came to do his good deeds in Washington and planned on leaving.
He's one of the unusual ones in the sense that he was not he was a Presidential Innovation Fellow. He came in to work on digital services. And then when he went to SSA as a person with an expertise in digital services, they had an opening for their CIO, and he jumped into that position, again, as a political appointee.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. And so just to sum it all up, do they need to be politically appointed, and what are some pros and cons?
You know, I talked to different people, and Tim Young, a former OMB official who was the deputy federal CIO, and now he's over at Deloitte, he believes it's really about the person. Who's the best qualified? As he said, it's got to be the right person for the right position at the right time. Sometimes political appointee is okay, but generally speaking, he believes that the position itself should not be politically appointed, because that would stop a lot of really great career people from stepping into a role as a federal CIO. I also spoke with with Mark Forman. Again, one of the first federal CIOs, we'll call him, though he didn't have that title. He worked in OMB under the Bush administration, and he also believes that having a political appointed mandate for CIOs is maybe not the best thing. Again, he says it comes back down to the involvement of the secretary and deputy secretary in creating and developing the roles and responsibilities of the CIO. And he even warns against something called the moral hazard dilemma. And this is the idea that if you assume that the political process would bring in the best person, you may lose sight of that and you may not get the best person in that role because you've decided, well, the process will take care of it. And in a sense, that wouldn't be a good thing in many ways.
And whoever becomes the new crop of CIOs, they're going to have to deal with cybersecurity. And you're also writing this week that there's new cybersecurity guidance from the White House in terms of the definition of what's major. And I'll say, I guess, is it major if Congress finds out about it? A breach.
Well, it's always major if Congress finds out about it. You're right, Tom. This is the Federal Information Security Management Act guidance. Comes out every year. Nothing surprising here that it's out. And yes, whatever those new CIOs that come in, they'll have to implement it and make sure it's working well. What was interesting to me about this guidance was specifically, you're right, that the OMB once again redefined what a major cyber incident is. I look back, I found 2007 really was the first time they talked about what a major cyber incident is. They redefined it in 2015, and then they redefined it again in 2016. And it's unclear why they decided last year's definition wasn't good enough. But what's interesting about this is it's really talking about any incident that is likely to result in demonstrable harm to the national security interests, foreign relations, or the economy of the United States, or public confidence, civil liberties, public health, or safety.
That sounds like they're taking in Russia and the election to kind of imply here.
It seems to be right. They're trying to broaden it to say it's not just if you steal our data, it's not just if you hack into our systems, but if you really start to hurt the American public, and again, I'll use their words, the confidence in the society, if you will, in the critical infrastructure. OMB also says a major instance would include an attack where the personal information of 100,000 people or more is taken, modified, deleted, or otherwise harmed. And I think that's another key piece.
All right. So something definitely to check out if that's your business.
We have a link on federalnewsradio.com to the 2017 FISMA guidance. You can find it there.
Federal News Radio's Jason Miller, as always, thanks so much for that update.
Thank you, Tom.
You can read his notebook now at federalnewsradio.com.